Okay, I'm going to open up the Committee on Veterans Affairs, day after Memorial Day, and for all you veterans, I hope you had a great day yesterday.
Me too.
First on the agenda today, where is the agenda? We have a discussion on what we're going to do on the interim. We have yet to determine that, so consequently, we're here to kind of build a consensus on which way we should go. I believe I threw out one particular issue, and that was about Oregon Department of Veteran Affairs home loans. Okay, we need to parallel federal VA with our criteria. We need, and that's 100% down. But I would also like to utilize this as 100% down for a refi for veterans as well, because I think that's a valuable tool. Right now, as this market stands today, a veteran could refi their house for 4.1%. Maybe they were locked in at 6% at one time or 7%, whereas they cannot refi that unless they go commercial and lose that benefit. So I'd like to see us pursue that as well. I'll turn this over to the chair. I see Mr. Chair got us here. So, Mr. Chair,
thank
I built the stage for you.
Thank you very much. We have a witness list, do we?
Nobody has signed up yet. So.
And we sent out invitations?
We did. And I'm not sure. Oh, I see someone raising their hand. A volunteer.
The guy in the back.
Director Willis. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jim Willis, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I'm here to make a couple of comments on this informational meeting of this important House committee for what might be important to do in the interim. Let me address right away what Representative Escobal raised with regard to the home loan situation. We have a very important bill pending before the U.S. Congress that addresses specifically the issue of refinance. And the issue with refinance is that under our current IRS tax code, we cannot use the qualified veterans mortgage bonds to do refinancing because it's specifically prohibited by their rules. Under this bill, that would be eliminated. And we could do refinances for veterans that have, as an example, a commercial mortgage at 6%. And let's say we were at 3.75, they could come in and do a refi on that existing loan. And it would be very beneficial to the veteran and something we're looking forward to. So I can tell you that our delegation, both on the Senate side and the House side, all of them are in favor of that bill. We're hoping to get a hearing. The two issues that seem to be standing in the way in terms of the Congress are the discussions around the national debt, which, you know, that's fine. That's something that needs to be addressed back east. But one of the things that contributes to a healthy economy is the ability of these folks to be able to reduce their amount of debt, individual debt, through things like refinancing. So we're going to work very hard to try to get that bill passed this session for the very reason that it helps build the national economy. And it will affect Alaska, Oregon, California, Texas, and Wisconsin. The reason that's important is because if you add all the veterans in California and Texas, you're talking about one-fifth of all of the veterans in the entire United States. In addition to that, there is a second very important bill that mirrors the passage of Measure 70 here in Oregon, which made the Veterans Home Loan Program at the state level a lifetime benefit. This bill, pending before Congress, does exactly the same thing and allows us to use the Qualified Veterans Mortgage Bond as a lifetime benefit, which is the same thing as the federal VA loan, which is already a lifetime benefit. And again, amends the IRS tax code to allow us to do that. Now, we have had some luck in the past, a couple of sessions ago in Congress, amending that code So this is about our second and third bite at the apple here. And if we can get one, and I hope both of these bills passed, it will contribute to the financial stability of our home loan program and expand the options to our veteran community here in Oregon. And I'm really looking forward to the passage of those bills, which I hope will occur this coming fall. So that's the one issue. I'm certainly willing to stop and take any questions on that one. If there aren't any, then I've got a couple more that I'd like to discuss.
Co-Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Willis, on these home loans, do we need any litigation or bills in Congress to be passed to allow it to, example, let's say in 1970 when I came home from Vietnam, I borrowed $10,000 from the ODBA, mm-hmm. and then 1975 I had to move, so I sold the house. Now, that I lose the benefit the way the rules were at that point. But are we going to have something passed to allow us to mirror federal, whereas example, that particular benefit may be $350,000 a day? I don't know. But would they take that $350,000 and minus the $10,000 that you utilized at your first purchase, and you'd have eligibility of $340,000?
Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel. I'm not sure exactly what happened in your particular case, but I can tell you there is the ability to do what's called reestablish your loan right. And as an example, if you sold your home because your family got too large for the square footage that you had, mm-hmm. or if you were transferred by your company, forced transfer, you had to move from Medford to Gresham, let's say, then because it was a forced transfer, you could go to ODVA and say, I would like to reestablish my loan right. And as long as that was your principal residence, then, and you sold the previous one, then you could get another loan. In the case of your family becoming too large for the square footage, you can go and seek to reestablish your loan again. And at that time, I believe you can only do that twice, and maybe a third on a hardship. If you could show that it was a hardship situation of some kind. In terms of the need for litigation to do that today, I think we're okay. I think we don't need the litigation to get it done. What we need is those two federal bills to pass.
Please.
But am I incorrect in assuming that you can use your VA, federal VA, as many times over as you'd like, and they just deduct that amount? Why wouldn't we mirror the same thing?
Well, we could.
Okay.
We could, but first of all, if we don't fix that benefit issue from time of discharge at the federal level, it's all a moot point, because the feds say that you cannot use these proceeds from the sale of the mortgage bonds past the 25th year of your discharge. And that kind of flies in the face of what we did out here with Measure 70.
Please.
Yeah, that's kind of like we have a stamp on the bottom of our foot and we expire at such and such a date. Because when I went to get my VA loan, I found out, ODVA, when I used it that one time, they said that Vietnam veterans were eligible, but World War II veterans had run out of eligibility time-wise. And I'm going, what do you mean? Well, they'd been out of service for so long,
right.
There was a cutoff date, so they lost that benefit, which I think is unfortunate.
Representative Esquivel, you're exactly right, because prior to the passage of Measure 70, it was under the state rules, it was 30 years from date of discharge.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, the World War II veterans would have expired, and most Korean War veterans would have as well.
Additional questions or comments?
Jim, we've received some input from the public, and one of the suggestions that we received describes a veterans court. And obviously don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm wondering if you could maybe describe for us kind of a continuum of how we might deal with vets who undoubtedly are experiencing some problems. That may be why they're before the justice system to begin with. Maybe at one end it is the creation of a whole new court. Maybe on the opposite end of that continuum we have an advocate for the vet, and we may have a whole lot of things in between. Could you describe some of those for us, please?
Yes, Chair Witt, members of the committee. We're very fortunate in Oregon because right now underway is a veterans court model in Klamath County. There's also one proposed in Deschutes County in Bend. I think that during the interim, what we could do and what this committee might want to do is, when they have a track record, and they will by that time, have the district attorney from those one or both of those counties come, and perhaps one of the circuit judges, and maybe even one of the defense attorneys that's been involved with the courts, and come and give the committee an overview so that we can better understand, is it working, is it transferable, and because it's based in large part on the Buffalo, New York model, which has been highly successful, my belief is that if there is a commitment by the courts, the prosecutors, and the defense bar, in addition to work with parole and probation officers and others that are involved, that this can work. And the model that drove the court in many other cases was the drug court model, where there was a set of appearances set up just for people dealing with the challenges of drug addiction. So we're really fortunate, Mr. Chair, that we have that underway right now, and I think if we bring those folks in, then by the February session we'll have some idea of what we can do to strengthen that and how we can make it work statewide for the benefit of these veterans who in many cases are coming before the criminal justice system as a direct result of their time in the combat zone and then coming back and their inability to reintegrate back either in with their families or suffering from drug and alcohol abuse based on the combat experience and so on. And so what's the best way to treat that? Because once they're in front of the criminal justice system, the system has to do something. And so now what are the options for the system to help out?
Thank you very much. I'm familiar with drug courts in both Clatsop and Columbia counties.
Sure.
And I am so impressed by the results that they turn out. And I just remember distinctly, I think Representative Boone was in the room at the time. One of our mutual judges described how he had placed one offender in essence it was something akin to a carpentry apprenticeship, and he was, I think, redoing a roof on a church, if I remember correctly. And anyways, the judge had driven by on several occasions just to personally view the progress, and had a personal relationship, actually, with the offender. And the pride that that young man brought back to everyone when he had completed his project was something to behold. I mean, I think probably for the, well, I may not be in a position to be able to say the first time, but I would suspect one of the few times that this individual was ever able to express to his family, those who were his immediate supervisors, to the court system and the general public, express how proud he was to have been able to have completed his project, not only to a successful level, but one to which the entire community had made recognition of what a tremendous job he had done. So I think, as you suggest, that there may be examples here that would benefit much of our veterans community if we were to take a similar approach. So thank you. And Alon, I know that you wanted to comment, I believe, as well.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you, chairs, members of the committee. Thank you for letting me speak. I think you're aware of the work.
Could you
that
please
I,
introduce
oh, I'm sorry,
yourself?
I'm Alon Lambert, executive director of Partnership for Veterans at Risk. A lot of the work that I do is actually with veterans who are involved in the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. And I do go to court with them, work with their attorneys. And we actually are starting a veterans docket here in Marion County. Judge Ochoa we have had three, I believe, committee meetings so far. We're meeting once a month. The idea is to have the veterans docket up by October 1st. And what we're doing is we've taken the Buffalo model. Each county seems to be doing it a little bit different. And so here in Marion County, what we're looking at is we feel that the requirements of who is a vet is a little too narrow for us. So because in most of the veterans courts, you have to be able to qualify for VA treatment or you're not considered for veterans court. I don't know if you knew that or not. So if you don't have enough time in service or you don't have a proper discharge, you don't get to go into those courts. So what we have done for the Marion County one is say a vet is a vet is a vet. Mm-hmm. And then there are specific crimes that we look at to see if they are fit in that criteria. One of the things that we looked at, and one of my concerns has been, is the domestic violence piece. And what we did was we defined that those who are responding in a way, particularly with assault for strangulation, those that are responding from whether it's a flashback or whatever, versus the true control and domination type of crime that's really domestic violence. We define that so that we can look at those that are either flashback or muscle memory from being in combat versus those that are really premeditated and or true domestic violence. Those we won't see, but the ones that are the others we will. So, in fact, our next meeting is in June 19th, I believe it is, and we have invited Chaplain Delbridge, and I did invite State Command Sergeant Major Brunt Connolly. He can't be there, but I'm hoping he has someone else. And then also Major Leibel from the JAG office. We've asked them to come so that we know what crimes, how they affect their careers, or what happens for them at their command level. It is happening. I can't speak for Judge Ochoa, but I think he would probably be happy to come and talk to the legislative body about that. The other thing is that I wanted to point out, and I wanted to talk a little bit later on, in the House Bill 3644 that we introduced, is that on Section 2, it does say a county shall consider implementing a criminal justice system that allows cases that involve veterans to be heard within a multidisciplinary setting. So that was one of the things that we're looking at. But yes, there's a desire to look at, I think it was Malheur County also contacted me and asked for some information on the Klamath court. So part of what we're looking at is a lot of the counties don't have the money to do a separate court, but they can do a docket. So for here in Marion County, it's going to mm-hmm. be like on a Tuesday afternoon at 3 o'clock, all the vet cases will be heard.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your work on that and your testimony. I think what I'd like to say is, veterans, if they're in the active military and they're arrested here and they're, whether they're here on leave or whatnot, they can be tried in our court and they can also be disciplined in their station. And sometimes the discipline that the military is going to dish out is much more severe than what it's going to happen in your hometown. Okay. And so I think that's something to keep in mind, too. This is not a get-out-of-jail-free card or a big gift to anybody, and we're not turning the cheek on these crimes that we just simply can't get there on. But this is also recognizing that soldiers can be disciplined in their line of duty and at their work, and also, in the end, we're trying to get them the help and access to benefits to get them better and reintegrate. So thanks for being here.
Thank you. I would like to reemphasize it's not get out of jail free. I've had four vets in the last month that I have had to have put back in jail. So it's not, it's yeah. giving them an opportunity, but it's you have to do what's required.
Certainly. Co-Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. didn't we pass in 2009 a law that would allow district attorneys the flexibility?
Yes.
Does this tie into this?
Well,
or is some of them just not doing anything with it?
Chair Witt, Representative Escobar, yes, it does give them that option, and of course they don't have to use it, but there are those that are, and it would. Your question was, does it tie in, or could it tie into the veteran court concept? And yes, it could. That's clearly the answer. Yes.
And we're saying that some of them are using it. There are a number who are not.
That's right.
Elon, if we were to, if we wanted to follow up on this and maybe delve into this a little deeper, contemplating a potential bill, do you think that at some point in June we might be able to call upon you and the other folks that are trying to set this up in Marion County and maybe have a panel of experts who are actually going through that process come and talk to us about some of the things that we would want to consider in drafting legislation along those lines?
Chairway, I believe so. Yes, they'd be very happy to do that.
Do you think... I would imagine as you're going through this process, the later the better, but also, of course, we'll be looking at, you know, shutting down committees and whatnot. But do you think possibly mid-June, something like that?
I think they would all be happy to come and talk about it.
Okay.
So I can talk to Judge Ochoa. If you know what kind of a date, I can work with him to get that.
Yeah. Very
maybe
good.
Maybe we can get a pattern.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be tremendous. Thank you very, very much, both. Alana, I know that you had signed up, I think, for more in-depth testimony. If you'd like to proceed with that, that would be fine.
Okay. Thank you. Chairs, members of the committee, I want to just talk a little bit about House Bill 3644, which I have talked to a few of you about. I did just want to report on what's happening. We were actually supposed to meet today with General Caldwell. That would be law enforcement, Kevin Campbell, myself. I think it was Oregon State Sheriff's Association, Chiefs of Police, to talk about the language that's in the bill that we worked on. And of what I wrote and gave to Representative Parrish is some of the items did not get translated the way that they were written.
Mm-hmm.
For an example, one of them was...
Coach Eskwill?
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt, but several of us here do not know what 3644 is.
My apologies.
We don't remember bill numbers, we just remember bills.
This was regarding veterans at risk and having law enforcement ask, be trained on veterans issues, ask law enforcement to ask the question, have you had military service?
No. It was a concept.
No, it was a concept.
Yeah, you and I met on this, I remember.
Right, that. We met on this, and yeah, we met on this.
Thank you for that refresher. Right. It's appreciated.
Sorry.
We remember 3643 and below. We just haven't gotten 3644.
That's all right. I'm kind of, you know, it's like dream big and get what you can, right? So, but part of what this asked for was to have law enforcement be trained on veterans issues, and the way it was written was that they would train basically each they would be training their own units, which is not what the intent was at all. So there's a number of things that we need to talk about as far as the language in this and what things might be able to come out of it. So I believe June 7th is now the date that they've given me to talk meet with General Caldwell, Kevin Campbell, Commander Rich Gerling, some of the people that were here previously actually I guess it was on the Senate side, was asked to testify on what's happening with training with law enforcement. So I just wanted to bring you up to date because I know I had talked to a few of you, and so I just wanted to let you know that we are doing some things to see if we can't change some of this.
Great. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Anything from, yes, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yeah, now I'm remembering a conversation about 3644 and where it was at. And I followed up with that with a couple law enforcement officials, I guess we'll call them. And, you know, they were concerned about the bill as written. And I think you and I had expressed that together because it was asking quite a great deal of notifications from law enforcement in terms of dealing with veterans, and I think it was almost impossible to achieve. But I do think if you approach it with the group, you're going to be able to get somewhere where there is a common training element in most law enforcement, that's DPSST. There may be a way to reach out for that. I don't disagree that we need to have the class of officer safety and dealing with veterans and what that means, but that as a vehicle was problematic, and I appreciate you working on that to get to a better day.
Chairman Representative Matthews, thank you. I was a little concerned, as I expressed to you, of how it came out from what I had written, because it did not express what I had written. Some of the things in here were requiring of law enforcement things that I never put into it. But I can tell you that we just trained Portland Police Bureau, trained 15 of their 100 trainers, and it was a two-day training. We got 3 hours of it, and the part on veterans at risk received an excellent rating, and Staff Sergeant Eddie Black, who was one of the people that trains soldiers up, he was a good portion of that training, and he's now been invited to actually do in-service trainings for Portland Police Bureau. We made up a card that gave all the important numbers for Multnomah County, and I laminated them, and now I have an order for 500 for the entire police bureau. So there's a lot of training that's being done individually. We did Oregon State Sheriff Association, some of it last Monday. So they're being done individually, but I'm concerned about the writing, as I expressed to you, about what came out.
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Seeing nothing more, thank you both very much.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If I may, before I leave, may I discuss one other bill?
Please. Absolutely.
Okay. I believe this committee heard this bill. It was, and now I'm afraid to mention it because I'm not supposed to talk about anything above 3646. But
3644.
Some of us are similarly challenged at lower levels.
Okay. This is actually a very serious issue. This is House Bill 3661. For lack of a better term, this has been called the suicide reporting bill. And you may recall that what this did was to direct specifically the health division to have the medical examiners make sure that when they do the death reports that we know whether or not the decedent was a veteran. And then, of course, if it was a suicide, that will be part of the death report. We'll know when we get the report whether or not the cause of death was suicide. But also the block will be checked for veteran. Now, the issue here is actually very simple, because when I did my original research on veteran suicide in Oregon and went back to 2006, I got pretty good data through 2008, and then I didn't get any. Because for whatever reason, if the reports were still showing them as veterans, they weren't being codified at the vital statistics people in Portland through the vets. I'm just told this is actually Senate Bill 36, or House Bill 3611, excuse me. Let me check change the record there.
I even remembered that one, Director.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Well, that's because it was
below 3644.
Oh, man.
Listen to this.
I know. Okay. Let me give him credit in my book. Okay, you have a check mark. All right. It is very difficult to measure a challenge that we all have, and this is one of them, especially with our younger veterans, if we don't know the number we're dealing with. And where are the demographics? Where is it occurring? And so I hope that bill, which is currently sitting in full Ways and Means, gets a hearing, and whoever attached the fiscal to it can explain, you know, what's the cost going to be. And I think the cost is, what's the cost going to be if we don't do something about it?
Right.
And I know we didn't put a fiscal on it, although we have a responsibility with regard to reporting and so on. So I'm just reporting that it's still in Ways and Means, and to the extent that someone on full Ways and Means can have a hearing on 3611, that would be a really good thing to do before the session's completed.
Thank you very much. Co-Chair Esquivel, are you by chance checking on the status of that bill?
Yes, I am.
So great minds think alike.
Well, as soon as we find out, Mr. Chair, you and I could go visit a few people with titles and see if we could get something released.
Absolutely. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yesterday being Memorial Day, I think we all had an opportunity to do things in district. And I attended an event, two events, one in particular at the Heroes Memorial. And they gave me an opportunity to speak to the group and a lot of veterans in the crowd. And I had mentioned that there's a lot of work still to be done and that this is a very important piece of that puzzle. And I mentioned that the numbers that were so staggering to me, as I recall, you had told us that the killed in action numbers were approximately 58,000, I think, is what you had reported at one point. And yet we're, as far as suicide death toll, now up to 130,000 plus.
That's correct.
And that, to me, is just earth-shattering. But when I conveyed those numbers to the audience, you could hear a gasp. I mean, people just didn't even compute until you put it into that context, and all of a sudden they realize, wow. And my point is, we're probably on track to do the same with these returning veterans if we don't do better than what we've done and get them the help we need. So it's a great way to track this and find out. And it's tough because I understand, too, there's no correlation between what's causing this. You can't find any one definitive term, but they're all veterans and trying to figure that out. But I appreciate you bringing it to the forefront.
Well, Chair Witt and Representative Matthews, one thing we do know about this is that those veterans who have not been enrolled in health care and specifically in mental health counseling are far more at risk for this kind of an outcome than those that are taking advantage of either individual counseling or group counseling. We know that's true. That's one element we know as a fact. So talking these young folks, and I see them all, to me they're all young folks, into going to counseling with their peers and then listening to the veterans of previous wars, even the Gulf War, and then Vietnam people, and they're all saying, wait a minute, we're all in this thing together. I'm not the only one that has this problem.
Yeah.
And then by doing that, I know we have saved lives. I'm absolutely convinced of it. But we simply have to reach even more. But again, and I think Representative Esquivel said in a previous hearing, we've got to measure the problem, the challenge. And until we can do things like passing 3611, we're not going to have the right numbers.
And I think Co-Chair Esquivel has an update on that bill.
Yeah, that bill is heading for the floor.
Headed to the floor.
Means. Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Well, that's great. So it's out of Ways and Means?
That's what the printout said.
Yep.
Well, that's great.
We'll pass it out of the House.
We're on the right path.
What else can we do for you?
Well, we're from the government. We're here to help.
All right. I don't know if you've seen the carpet at the Veterans Home lately. No, it's fine. It's good.
Representative Huffman to get that done.
The only other issue I wanted to comment, since you're talking about things in the interim, is to continue, as this committee has, as the employer support to Guard and Reserve, a couple of the community colleges, and a couple of our stand-downs around the state have focused on employment. And to the extent that, and I really hesitate to tell elected people this, but let me just share this experience with you. When you are on the stump out in your districts, and you have employers in your audience, and I bet you do every time you speak, if you will encourage them to offer employment to veterans, that would be hugely helpful. Hugely helpful. Because they may not have thought about it in that respect, but I know when I go to places like Kiwanis Clubs and Rotary Clubs and other places to speak, I always add that issue. And then people will come up to me often at the end of the meeting, and maybe they have with yourselves, and say, well, you know, I've got a couple of jobs coming up. Who could I talk to? And then I put them right on to a local employment veteran representative out of employment, what we call a leaver, and marry them up. And then the leaver knows who the veterans are in their geographic area, And we had a wonderful outcome with an individual case not long ago where an employer called our department. And we're not the employment department. We're the veterans department. But he called, said, hey, I'm in bad need of a welder. I've got to have a welder, a guy in Hillsboro. So I called and I took his call personally. And I called the local employment veterans representative in Hillsboro. And I said, you got anybody like that? Yeah, I got a guy like that. So they hooked these two guys up, and this guy didn't have his journeyman card yet, but he was in training, and the guy took him because he had other people that were already journeymen that could take him on the apprenticeship program, and he hired him.
Yeah.
And I bet we can repeat that all over the state. Mm-hmm. So to the extent you can help us do that, we're going to get some more of these young people employed, I'll bet you.
Well, that's something that each one of us can take on.
Great. Well, thank you for letting me have my 2 cents worth.
Thanks very much, Tim.
Appreciate it. Sure.
Thank you very much.
Sure. And thanks for the good work you've all done during this session. It's really appreciated.
Back at you.
You bet.
Next, I'd like to call up, please, Mac McDonald.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald, United Veterans of Oregon. Let me first state that my emphasis is on supporting the living, and I think we honor the dead by supporting the living. So when legislation comes up, my priorities are helping those that are still with us. I looked over what we've done so far this year, and let me tell you, this year has been a pleasure compared to the last session. I'm glad to see veterans on the committee, and I'm glad to see people that support veterans on this committee. It is really a pleasure to be here. I look at the bills we have, and of course, every session you have things that you're happy for and you have disappointments. And looking at the end of this session, I think the biggest disappointment is Senate Bill 338, which deals with the community colleges. Because for 3 sessions now, the community colleges have fought, given a tuition waiver to the unremarried widow of a person killed in action and the dependents of 100% disabled veterans. And I'm hoping that 338A, when it comes to fruition the next session, because they have to report back, we finally get a bill through supporting that bill. I'm hoping that the veteran service officers at the college level, I know money is tight, but by having veteran service officers at the college level supporting veterans, we bring money into the state of Oregon. It's not a lose thing, it's a win-win proposition. And I'm hoping that Ways and Means can see fit to approve that particular bill. The third bill that I'm really concerned with is because we're going to lose some veterans. They may be homeless, but they're still veterans. And they still need medical help, and we have a bill that holds medical personnel liable for helping homeless, not only homeless veterans, but homeless people. It's a bill that I think is essential. There's no cost to the state. We have volunteers that are willing to do it, and I know there's opposition from some people in the medical profession and trial lawyers. But God, that to me, that's common sense. And this body has shown common sense in the past, and I hope we show it in the future.
Matt, could I interrupt you here just for a minute? I think Representative Huffman had a question or comment here.
Thank you, Mr. Mac. Was that 3623? I know I'm getting above the.
You should remember that. It's below the 3443 and below.
It's 3662 today. It was 3232, I believe. But it deals with health Medicare, and it comes out of the Central Oregon. They have a coalition. They have a setup.
That has a work session tomorrow, I believe.
There's a hearing tomorrow.
A hearing tomorrow. Okay. Yeah, we've been pushing on. Again, I'm like the rest of these guys. I've lost bill numbers a couple of months ago, but we've been pushing on that one. So I'm hopeful too with you. But anyway, I just wanted to give an update that we do have a meeting coming up.
And what will happen when the session is over? I'll get together with various veterans organizations. We have a quarterly meetings, and we'll review all the veterans bills that have come up. And I can tell you there's some that are going to go down because we think they're frivolous. For instance, a special hunting season for veterans, I think, is wasting money. That's just my personal opinion, and I may be wrong. But we have hunting seasons, and if a veteran's here, and if he can hunt, he should be able to follow the law and hunt at that particular time. So my emphasis is not on that bill whatsoever. There are other bills that we have need emphasis on, bills that help veterans exist and become viable people in the community. And I think that's the way that the veterans organizations are going to go, is if a bill helps a veteran exist and become a viable citizen, we support the bill. If it's a bill that's maybe nice to have, that's in the lowest of all priorities. And I'd be glad to take any questions.
Thank you very much. John, would you like to jump in here, and maybe we can have a discussion after your presentation's completed?
Well, John Huddle, for the record, from Lapine, Oregon. First of all, 3662 started out as 3019, if you remember. Got rolled into 3232, and then some bills got killed.
And we wonder why we can't remember that.
Right. I only deal with a few.
3643.
Do you? I don't know. Maybe you wake up in the night with numbers on your head. The problem with 3662, I think, is that bill started out too broad. It was trying to do too many things in one bill, and the challenge has been getting it narrowed down, and I believe they're getting that down now, and Chuck Hemingway from Central Oregon Veterans Outreach has been working hard on getting folks, players to the table and getting language right, and of course, you know, the time frame is the barrier now. I actually put together some things, more ideas. You might consider the menus. All things that I believe are quite substantial. I think there's a point where you do things that are the feel-good types of bills. I appreciate this committee taking on the memoriam for Phil Bellefuel. And some of my comments come out of dealing with his issue. You know, he was terminally ill and he was dying. So what I'm looking at, Chair Witt and committee members, is first thing is suicide prevention. You know, my profession's a school psychologist, so I deal with psychology. I've fortunately never lost a child on my watch. I came close a few times. I was proactive. I ruffled feathers. But I've learned some things. And one of the things I've learned is keep my ears open, sometimes keep my mouth shut. So a lot of these ideas that I'm presenting are things that have come out of the Band of Brothers out of Central Oregon. Out of five Band of Brothers now, four of them have outgrown their restaurants that they meet at, and they meet weekly. The largest runs 100 or more every week. They're now Band of Brothers in other states because of starting out of the Bend one, which is what Phil Bellefuel was help start. So the first thing I'd like to talk to you about is the suicide prevention. You know, there's a group of people that will call hotlines. They will seek help. Those are the people that probably, in my experience, are probably not going to commit suicide or not as likely. It's the ones that are quiet that surprise everybody. But if you look back, you can see the signs. I went out to Sisters Thursday because I wanted to get their input. That seems to be a group that has their ears to the ground more than any other group of veterans that I deal with. And there was a particular person there, that there are two of them actually, that have been active in trying to help prevent suicide and get people reengaged. And one of them, they mentioned that they have been working on, would come to meetings or come to, you know, the lunch or whatever, is now holding up in his home again. He's 40-some years old. He's not coming out. That's a danger sign. So if we can take these veterans, train them not to be suicide prevention specialists, but give them sufficient training to know how to recognize the signs, give them support to reach out to other veterans and to returning military members, I believe we have a chance of being successful there. This is this kind of mentorship thing has been done in other areas. I believe it's worth looking at as a pilot type project. We know that we're losing far too many veterans to suicide, and actually the women veterans are committing suicide at a higher rate. I just skim read a research study about women are not handling the stress of military experience as well as the men. Some of it, they speculate, is because of the sexual harassment that's gone on with some women. But whatever the reason, if we can do something there, I think there would be minimal fiscal impact. What I envision is, because many veterans can barely afford to take themselves to a weekly brunch or lunch, where they could get reimbursed for the lunch of the breakfast of the veteran that they're working with, through some sort, maybe through the service officers, but some sort of a mechanism to create a pilot study where we train veterans to recognize and know how to reach out to other veterans and encourage them, because many of them are doing it already. The reason I have this idea is we got two veterans right there and sisters that have been doing this. When I was sitting on this homeless coalition to, develop the plan to end homelessness for sisters, there weren't veteran homeless in the area because veterans had already taken them into their homes. So that's where that idea comes from. The second one, I'm a kind of a hardcore activist. I get pissed pretty easily when I see things go wrong. I don't know if you've followed the suicide prevention, but the next one, which is the on creation of advocacy, we find that the recent court case found that the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs was an abysmal failure at reaching out and working with veterans with mental health issues. As a suggestion, I wonder if we couldn't empower our Department of Justice to take on some sort of an advocacy role that would be separate from ODVA, because ODVA has to work with the Veterans Affairs a lot. To do something to begin to hammer with the power of the state to force the VA to recognize that veterans have problems. One of the examples I give is a veteran that I believe is a Pearl Harbor survivor. It's my recollection, he has 8 battle stars. Can't walk anymore, at least for any distance. I assume he has a heart problem. They said, well, you can't have a scooter because your wife drives. His wife doesn't drive. They were told that. They just kind of seemed to create some of their rationale out of thin air. And I hear that a lot from veterans. Sometimes they give up. They feel like that the people deciding their claims are basing what they do on their life expectancy. And if they can outlast the veteran, that saves them money. At least that's the veteran's feeling. The third one is expand the Veterans Justice Program. By statute, DUI arrests are excluded. And that was at the request of Chuck Hemingway, who's been active in the Veterans Court in Deschutes County. And to me, it would make sense. We ought to look at finding a way to do more there so that they can be treated rather than just run them through the usual run of the mill, because if you got somebody with PTSD, chances are there's a good number of those are self-medicating. Then another issue that's come up that seems to be a barrier on the veterans' homes is matching funds. And as you think about it, putting a bond issue out on property owners isn't a good way. I mean, there's not a real return. There's a return because people care about veterans and people want jobs in their community. But the return is to the state for new jobs that create income tax. So if we could find a way for the state to issue the bonds, and they're not going to happen all of them at once because the VA is not going to fund all 900 and some odd beds that we need at once, I think that would be a good way to go. There's been quite a push in Central Oregon for a veteran cemetery. If you look at the criteria, even under the Obama administration, which has lowered the number of veterans in a catchment area, which is 75 miles from a proposed national cemetery, to 80,000, there is no way that you can have a national cemetery east of the Cascades. But the VA has been pushing state veteran cemeteries, and state veteran cemeteries are a way to go. They will fully reimburse the construction of the cemetery. The state comes up with the land, or we get the land donated in Central Oregon and Eastern Oregon. We've got a lot of government land that potentially could be donated for a cemetery. So there's been quite a lot of push for that. And then the last one is coming out of Phil Bellefuel's experience. He made too much for in-home care, just by a little bit. And I believe they were considering his Pearl Heart or his Purple Heart payments as part of that income. And I think some of those things we have to look at as a way to say those are excluded. Because I think it puts veterans at a disadvantage sometimes. Had Phil lingered, I don't know what he was incontinent. He couldn't be left alone. He had the son of his former girlfriend who he lived with, and he had his next door neighbor, a Vietnam era veteran. Those two veterans were pretty much responsible, along with wife or spouse and girlfriend, for taking care of Phil. Could have been very tragic for everybody. And I could see the stress on those two, especially his neighbor. So I think that's something that might be worthwhile looking at.
Questions or comments for our panelists?
Yes, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, maybe could he have been connected with some community services?
There's
something like that.
What they ended up having to do was pay, I think it was like $500 every 48 hours for round-the-clock care. And it wasn't care, it was actually just more watching. And they had to pay more if that person had to be woke more than once in the night. I couldn't understand how they were doing that. But he made too much. There was quite a lengthy time to get through to, before the VA could begin to pick up. It took like 60 days, 90 days or more. In fact, my comment was he'll be deceased before the VA could ever get involved. But the state, their consideration for income was, he was just made slightly too much.
Anything else? I just wanted to set a challenge to your band of brothers. We have been, Senator Johnson and I have been raising funds for the Oregon State Secretary of State Flag Fund. It came to our attention that all of our Iraq and Afghan soldiers that requested state flags weren't receiving those because there was no money in the fund. We checked the fund out. It was a private fund set up originally, I believe, by Senator Johnson's father. And that's how I received my flag when I was in Vietnam from Clay Meyer, then Secretary of State Clay Meyer. We're about $1,000 to meet our goal. I challenge your band of brothers to come up with that $1,000.
And that's the...
Send it to the Secretary of State Flag Fund.
Okay.
And we'll have made our goal for the next 2 years.
Let's see what we can do.
What is the amount?
$15,000.
For 2 years.
For 2 years. Well, I appreciate any help you can help help us out on. Anything else? Thank you very much. Anyone else would like to speak? Any ideas, suggestions? If not,
wait.
What I'd like to see us do, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, and I appreciate your, I knew that you would be way more organized than I was on this one. But when I was speaking to a joint meeting at Memorial Day celebration in Seaside for Elks and American Legion, I was, thanks to Tom, printed out a copy. It was a 4 pages, a single space, of all the bills that we've done and the status that they're where they are right now, and was able to give each group a list of this so they could keep up on their own with the number and, you know, all that. And I just noticed that there's just a few more items we're waiting for on some of these, and just make sure that we maybe check in with the somebody from the task force and double check to make sure that we've got everything that we need. And if we don't have everything, that's something we can do over the interim and then, you know, running up to the 2012 session. And maybe just some, if there are any, I know that occasionally bills pass through here that need adjustments or tweaks or whatever. And if there becomes anything like that, that we could somehow do a check on that in a timely manner, so that if we do need to do anything in 2012 to fix something that maybe we overlooked or it's not working out exactly the way we want and we can make it better, then that we do that in a timely manner.
Well, I just hope that we get the bills that we'd sent down to Ways and Means out, because it wasn't an expensive ordeal. It was under $2 million total, I believe, for the whole shebang. And I hope that we get those out of Ways and Means and pass those on. I would like to ask each and every one of you to give me your top three priorities of the list you've received. So, and then I'll, if we'll just mail it to, email it to our administrator and have her, Jill, have her take care of it, and then we'll kind of lay out what we're going to do in the interim. And I would like to have this as not necessarily my idea or Brad's idea, but it's our idea of what we want to do.
So. Do you have a deadline, sir?
I would like to have it done within the next week,
okay,
if that's possible.
Just, yes. just for the good of the order, yesterday I was approached by a constituent who had told me about a gentleman that had somewhat taken advantage of the community and a lot of folks around him by basically impersonating a military official. And she had been with him as a girlfriend, boyfriend for a couple of years, didn't know the truth. But he had gotten a lot of personal gain, a lot of gifts given to him as a result of this, and people kind of red carpet for this veteran. And this is an older gentleman. But anyway, in looking into this, I was somewhat dumbfounded that the Stolen Valor Act has been, by the Ninth Circuit Court, ruled unconstitutional and a violation of free speech, which just strikes me as so odd. And I appreciate Tom Mann getting back to me so quickly, but I just got to tell you, I can't believe that somebody could be out there impersonating a veteran for personal gain of any kind and not be held accountable for that. It's fraud in its lowest form, but to me it just it struck me as odd. So I'm going to look into it a little bit deeper. But Mac, you've got your hand up back there, and I don't know that I'm able to call on you, but it was somewhat frustrating to me. So, Mr. Chair, with that, if you'd like Mr. McDonald to come forward, that'd be fine, but we can take it offline.
You can call him up. It's okay.
I want to share it with the committee. I was really, Mac, if you want to come forward and shed some light on that, I just thought this was just, really unfortunate. And bizarre. Yeah, absolutely. Particularly when you
Chairman, about, members of the committee.
Yeah.
Mac McDonald, United Veterans. 2 years ago, two sessions ago, we passed a law where it's a felony to impersonate a veteran for personal gain. There is a law on the books, I'm sure. I know it was passed.
At least in the state of Oregon, isn't it?
State of Oregon.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Okay, well, I'll dig deeper into that and make sure that that's true and that it doesn't need
to be. But I know we passed the law because we had trouble with panhandlers.
Mm-hmm.
And that the reason for the law came about because of panhandlers. But it was a felony to panhandle and claim you were a veteran and when you weren't a veteran.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thanks for a little bit of light there. I found it. There's a lot of groups out there that are trying to build homes for some of our paralyzed veterans and doing these great things, and I would sure hate to see somebody not do the homework to find out that maybe they're not truly a veteran and they've given a great deal and exhausted resources towards the cause that wasn't worthy. So appreciate that, Matt.
And I would like to say that I understand the frustration sometimes with the Veterans Administration, the system. I'm going to tell you a little story about myself. I was in the VA system for about 9 months, and they're treating my diabetes from Agent Orange. And so I finally went to my own doctor because we weren't gaining anything on it. So I went to my own doctor, and he put me on several medications that have dropped that level and made it very tolerable. And so I thought, well, doggone it, I get a $225 a month thing, and so why don't they at least provide my medicine? So I went back out to the VA and said, you know, you could provide my prescriptions. Well, it's not that big of a deal. Well, it is a big deal because they wanted me to enter back into the system and see a doctor. But I thought that was pretty ironic since the first 9 months I was there, I never did lay eyes on a doctor. But even though they'd have the records of my doctor to read, I had to go see one of their doctors, which I turned down because, of course, I don't want to cut someone out that really needs it because I have, you know, my own doctor. So anyway, that proceeded. And then what was interesting, I said, well, at least give me my test strips because I use 3 to 5 test strips a day to check your sugar, your blood sugar. And this guy looks at me and he grins and he said, you're not going to like this answer. I said, what's that? He said, well, you're number two diabetic. And I said, yes. He said, well, somebody in Washington, D.C. decided that you only need one every other day, since you're not a number one. So, and a 90-day supply would have been 45 test strips, which means nothing. So, I can understand the frustration we have at the VA. So,
would that be Dr. Congressman, whoever?
I couldn't believe it.
I forgot to mention, though, I wanted to tell the committee, too, and everybody else who helped on this. The people in Seaside were very appreciative of the bill, the Senate Bill 74, the Welcome Home for Vietnam Vets, and several of the guys came up to me afterwards and told their stories and thanked me. And I had brought a framed copy of the resolution or the bill, thinking I was just going to be at the Legion. And then when the Elks were there too, I thought, oh, I better give them. I brought 3 extra copies. And then the guy who'd written to me, just as a constituent, just wanted me to. No, and they were interested in if the governor was going to continue going to the services and everything. And pretty soon there was this little group, and they all look at it, and they said, well, could I get one of those? And, you know, I said, if you need any more, let me know. And he says, I'm going to be taking a list, I'm sure. They all want these parchment copies of this bill, and they're all going to go. I told them where I got my frames, and they're all going there to get them. And I said, you better hurry. They're almost out of that size because it fits it just right, and you can put them side by side, and it's a decent
good
display. But they were very, very appreciative. They said it's been a long time, and we're really happy that you cared enough about us now. So,
well, when we signed that bill, and Director Willis was there with the governor, and when we signed, we were all there. When we signed that bill, there was a lot of those Vietnam veterans that that touched them pretty hard. So,
good.
Very good. So, if we could get those, yes, Representative.
Two things. Representative Boone, did you say that Tom got you a list of all the bills mm-hmm. that we had done and the status? Tom, could I request that?
Tom, can you CC the whole group?
Right away.
Or is it Nick? Is it Nick that does that now?
I did it done this afternoon.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And the other thing is kind of along the lines of what I said in our subcommittee, I would, because of there was a lengthy list of bills that we dealt with this session, and kind of to tie in with what Max said too, not all the bills made it through. So before we get
too lengthy a list that we're looking at for the interim and going in next session, I think maybe our first order of business would be to look at the bills that we passed through but either got stuck in Ways and Means or whatever the case might be. And instead of, you know, forgetting those, maybe let's focus on reworking those bills and seeing what we can do with them then.
Representative, what I was thinking on those, the ones that do not make it through, are the ones that we will take in the interim as a committee bill to submit and go back at it again.
Yeah.
But I would like to see us prioritize the three things we'd like to see during the interim to discuss, and we'll just go over the number of votes and what we have. So that way we can do some work groups ahead of time and then come prepared for when we do have our interim committee. I think we have one in September, isn't it? September we'll have one, so that way we can have something maybe in July and August where we could do a phone work group. We'll assemble work groups on the specific two or three items, four items, whatever we pick up on. And then that way we'll be very, very prepared when we hit it in September, if that's okay with everyone. So.
Are there any reports that were required by any bills that would pass that would be due to us by September or December or somewhere
so.
There?
I don't recall any.
Nothing, okay. Mac had mentioned the community colleges.
Here's this Senate Bill 338.
Yeah, that's...
That begins of 212.
Tried to go through them all, but
so that report would be due in February then.
So.
Yeah, that's May 3rd, so that's all February 2012.
Okay, anything else?
Or later.
Anything for the benefit of the cause? If not, adjourn.